Before we begin with the parasha, just proper to mention that this week was a very tragic week. This week we experienced the petira of the Gadol Hadar, Rav Steinman, Zecher Tzadik Levracha. Okay, we in America we're not all that familiar with Rav Steinman, unfortunately, but we do recognize in Eretz Yisrael he's the undisputed Gadol Hadar. He was 104 years old. And until his last day, he was fresh. He was pretty. He was fresh and clear, fresh. And he was a manik. And it's a very tragic thing when a gadol hadar is nifter. And unfortunately, we don't feel that. Obviously, in America, we feel that connected. We don't. But a gadol hadar is a gadol hadar, and it's not something to take lightly. Just because a person is 104 years old does not mean that he's chayav misa, chas v'shalom. And if a person is nifter at any point in time, no matter what their age is, it's a wake-up. It's a very difficult time. And it's not a coincidence that his petira took place against the backdrop of Parshas Miketz. I think from all of the 54 parashios in the Torah, Parshas Miketz is the most painful parsha. We find in this week's parsha Yosef crying. Where do you find in the Torah a person crying? It's not all that often you find someone crying. Yosef cries multiple times in this week's parsha. Every time he sees his brothers, he cries. He goes into the back room, he sees Binyamin, he cries. Yosef is a very emotional person. There is an enormous amount of emotion expressed here with Yosef. Yaakov Avinu, the pain experienced by Yaakov Avinu in Parshas Miketz is probably greater than the pain he experienced back in Parshas Vayeshev. In Parshas Vayeshev, when they showed him Taroif Taraf Yosef, they showed him the Kesenes Pasim that was drenched in blood. Vayimohen lehisnachen. He refused. He could not find comfort. But yet in this week's parsha, when they come back and they tell him that they tell him that Shimon has been taken hostage, and this man, this mysterious man in Egypt, wants Binyamin, and he sees in front of him three of his children are going to be lost. The pain is enormous, and you have to be a thinking person. It doesn't take much when you read the parsha, you learn the parsha, to try to connect yourself to Yaakov Avinu. And feel his pain. Feel the pain of Yosef. Feel the pain of the brothers. The brothers, how they expressed, Avol Hashemim Anachnu, Alochinu, Asheroinu, Esoras Nafshoi, Vescharno Yoleinu, Veloy Shomanu. These psukim, this week's parasha, are jam-packed with pain, with tsar. And when a person who is a Gadol Hador, a tzaddik, a Talmud Chacham, a person who everyone in Klal Yisrael loved, adored, appreciated, and he's taken from us, it's a very painful reality, and it's not a coincidence. Again, like I said, is that this is taking place against the backdrop of a parsha that's mole tsar and full of emotion. Chazal also tells us that the events that happen the parasha, always you could always find a remnant to the days of the week. Now, I'm not exactly sure I'm saying correctly here in this pasuk, but when Rav Steinman was nifter on it was Tuesday. Okay, so it's not the pasuk I want to refer to. He was nifter on Tuesday, but here in this week's parasha, in Parashas Rabbi, I think there's a pasuk that really captures his petira, where the pasuk says Vayoyimru. The brothers said to their father Yaakov, they said, they were relating what happened, Shenem Osar Avodecha Achim Anachnu. We are 12 Shvatim, we are 12 children, which means that there's a Klal Yisrael. Bnei Ish Echad Be'eretz Kinoan. Vihinei Hakotoin Es Avinu Hayoim. The Katon, the small one, is with our father today. Veho Echad Einenu. And one of us is no longer. Now, what is that? In the Lefi Pshuto Shel Mikra, they're telling over Yosef that we are 12 children, and the youngest among us, Binyamin, is at home with our father Yaakov, and one of the 12 children, referring to Yosef, has disappeared. We don't know what happened to him. That's the Pshuto Shel Mikra. But in light of the events of this week, this is really what has happened to us in this week's parasha. They have over a person who everyone loved. There was a person of Steinman. Everyone was on his team. The entire Klal Yisrael. Shneim Osar Avodecha Achim Anachnu. B'nei Ish Echad B'Eretz Kanan. Especially in Eretz Yisrael, Eretz Kanan, Eretz Yisrael is we're all part of one group. V'hine, and today, HaKoton Es Avinu Hayom. Who is Avinu? Al Derech Drush? Avinu is... Avmeir, please. Who is the Avinu Hayom? The Avinu is Ribbono Shel Olam. Ein lanu ela lishoin ela al Avinu Shebashamayim. Avinu Malkeinu. Rav Steinman, we read some of the news clippings and articles, he was the quintessential Koton, Onof. You see what kind of home he lived in. You see his hanhaga, what kind of life he lived. He gave it tzava, that people should not name children after him. There should be no write-ups in any newspapers. There should be no hespedim.
The New York Times today.
There should be...
They
had obituary in the New York Times. They wrote about what he wanted to leave this world. He wanted that it should be no zecher that he ever even existed in this world. That's the degree of his humility. Humility that we have not. And he was serious. He was as sincere as it gets. Okay, he did not want anyone to be. Can you imagine? You should not name anyone after me. And he said, "Don't make a machlekas about it. If someone doesn't want to listen to my tzava, don't approach. So let him name if this makes him feel good. Gesund to hate, but you should know my preference is I don't want you to name a child after me. And if someone does so, okay, so leave him alone. I mean, you know who that is. You know what the godless of that is. He should bury him. He gave it tzava. They should bury him in the simplest, the cheapest grave there is." Only 10 people should come to his burial. Mm-hmm. And his incredible hashgacha, I've read the article, hashgacha brought this, the police prepared for this. Yeah. They prepared already years ago for this, after the tragedy by Rav Rosen's Levaya, when there were some people that were nifter into a stampede, what happened, people got crushed. Yeah. So they prepared for this, and they incredibly, it was an incredible hashgacha brought this, they were able to sneak him out of the Levaya. The Levaya was still going on, when he was already in the cemetery.
Wow.
And he was buried, lefi his sava, 30 people, there were only 30 people there that participated in his kavura. I remember years when Rav Shach, Zecher Levracha, was nifter, so I saw a video of what went on at the cemetery. It's scary what went on in the cemetery. Thousands of people in the Beis HaKvaras.
Wow.
And there's no place to stand in the Beis HaKvaras. There's no place to move.
It was undeveloped area. It was a sakonis nefashis.
And here, Bahashkocha Pratis, there were 30 people. The whole, they in the news media, they claim 600,000 people. Is that a correct number? I don't know. But there were only 30 people in the cemetery. And you can even see the picture. This was a sava, a humble person, Hakoton, the person of this generation, who is the Koton, who viewed himself to be, who is humble, meek. Es Avinu Hayoim. Today he's with Avinu Shabashamayim. He's in a Mokoim that we have no understanding of. A Mokoim of Ganedin, a Mokoim of Tzadikim. And V'ho Echad, the person who in this door was the Echad. He was the Echad Behe Hayidia. Ho Echad. The Godel Hadar Einenu is no longer with us. And that's a painful reality. It's a wake-up call. What's going to be now? You know, to a certain degree, he kept a certain degree of achdus and klal yisrael. To a certain degree, we have one undisputed authority. It's a tragedy. It's a wake-up call. And it's something that we are not allowed to ignore. It's something that we have an obligation to remember, to focus on, to read about, to learn from his life, and to properly reflect upon what he has done, what he has, the Kedusha, the Tahara, and the Yirah Shemayim that he has brought down to this world. Yehi Zichroi Baruch. Okay, let's now talk a little bit of the parasha. Let's start with the parasha. Miketz begins with the dreams. So we have two dreams. The first dream is about the Sheva Paros. Seven paros, yifos, marev, beautiful. Uviyos, basar. And it says something very interesting. Vatir'ena bo'ochu. Where were these beautiful, fat, delicious paros hanging out? So you would expect They're at the Plaza, the Waldorf. They were at the Hilton. Right? Where were they hanging out? These were Yefois Mare, Spasar. I was in Kishosa. I went to visit someone in the Waldorf, and there was a wedding going on. So they were taking pictures of the Kala and the Chasan, and everyone was watching. Ah, this is what's called the Yefois Mare, Ubriyo Spasar. Where else? The Waldorf. That's the place to take the pictures. That's the place, the backdrop. That's where it's fit. That's where Chasan Kala belong. Enoch Anami. That's what makes it beautiful. But that's not where these beautiful paros were hanging out. They were hanging out. They were hanging out where? On the ochel. What's the ochel? The swamp.
The swamp.
The swamp. Okay. They were hanging out in the place that is the least luxurious. The
cows don't normally hang around in March.
This is not a place where you hang out. Okay. It's a disgusting swampy limb where there are bugs and there's mold. And it's not a healthy place to be. There's no air conditioning in the Aga. Okay, it's not the place they want to be. What? Do they? Do they really like it? I'm not so sure they like it, but that's what it says. They were in swampland. Okay, fine. Then we go further. There were another seven parts which came from the Yar, from the Nile. And they stood next to the fat cows. Now here the pasuk repeats exactly what happened. And it repeats, though there's no need for the pasuk to repeat exactly what they look like, but it says here that the paros, which are the ra'ois hamareh, they swallowed the other paros. And yet the pasuk goes through the effort of telling us what the other paros look like. They were yefois hamareh and v'habriyos. Why is that necessary? Once the pasuk already told us in the beginning of these paros were yefois hamareh v'habriyos, it's not necessary for the pasuk to repeat and tell us that the seven paros were yefois hamareh v'habriyos basar. Let it just say that the seven paros that were emaciated, they came out of the Yar, and they swallowed the first set of paros. Why does the pasuk have to repeat and tell us again why that what the paros, the fat paros, what they look like? So I want to suggest what?
A cow doesn't eat a cow.
A cow doesn't. Again, that's also part of the difficulty of the dream. But why is the pasuk have to repeat and tell us the details of what they look like when the pasuk already told us what they look like? So I want to suggest an answer based upon a question. How is it possible for this to happen? In this world, people who are powerful don't fall very quickly. If you have a nation that's mighty, that's strong, has nuclear weapons, it's a world power, it just doesn't happen that a third world nation comes along and conquers a mighty nation. It doesn't go like that. It's not al pi derech hateva. We're now in the backdrop of Hanukkah. That's the exception. How was it possible for these thin, emaciated cows to come out of nowhere and to swallow up the massive, beautiful cows, Yefois Mareh Brios Basar? So I want to suggest is that the pasuk is teaching us Musar, and it's telling us, you know where their weakness lied? Because they were no longer hanging out by the Aga. That's the difference between the first description of the paros and the second description of the paros, Yefois Mareh. In the first description of the paros that were beautiful, Yefois Mareh Brios Basar, they were hanging out by the Aga. In the second description, which is totally superfluous, it repeats the details but leaves out one very important detail. It does not mention that they were still grazing by the swamp. And that's where that was the weakness. In other words, the Musar Haskel is, when a person is blessed with Briois, Yefois Mareh, it is your duty to give back, to reciprocate, to show some form of chesed with the people who are less fortunate. The Agam is not the place where you would expect the paros, the yefois mare brios basar. There's a musar. The paros that were yefois mare brios basar, you know what they did? They went to do chesed. They went to the place of the Agam. Who hangs out at the Agam? The emaciated, the poor people, the people who have very little. They were there to be mechazek. They were there to... The Yefois Mare Brios Basar allowed themselves to mingle with the masses, with the simple folk who hang out in the Agah. The moment when the Poros decided that it doesn't pass for us, such chashuva creatures, the fat cows like us, that we should go and associate with the lowly people who are on welfare, on all the government programs, in the shelter along the Agam, doesn't pass for us. We have to make for ourselves a gated city, our own community. That's when their weakness was exposed, and that's when the emaciated cows were able to consume them and obliterate them. I think there's a mussar here. This is not what the pasuk goes in, because there are too many questions. When we first describe the cows, the yifois mar ubrios basar, we add this fact, vatirena ba'ochu, which is something which is totally unexpected for these type of creatures to find themselves in this place. And then when the pasuk goes on to describe them a second time, at their downfall, it repeats and describes them all again with the exact same terms, the exact same information, but here it leaves out the fact that they were still pasturing in the ochel, which means that these paros had a change of attitude. Why should we continue to be kind and be gracious and associate with the simple folk who hang out in the Agam? Agam is always a place where Chazal say it's a place of nothingness. Chazal tells us that the Sefer Torah, you take a Koneshel Agam, because an Agam is it's a humble, lowly place, a place of water, a marshland. It's a place of humility. And therefore, when you write a Sefer Torah, you have to draw from humility to write Chidushei Torah, to write a Sefer Torah. Here, when the Poros were swallowed up, they're still Yifois Mare Brios Basar, but they're no longer found in the Agam. They feel it's not their place. They're besser dimension. That's where they fell. That's Eich Naflu Giboirim. When you begin to be filled with Gaiva, when you begin to feel that because HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave me Bracha, I'm separate, I'm special, I can separate, and that's where we find their weakness. And I think the same exact idea is repeated in the next section. What's the next section? The same exact parallel. We have the Sheva Shibolim, which are Oilois. It says about these stalks, Bikone Echot. They were all connected to one stem. Briois Vitoivois. And suddenly, Vine Sheva Shibulim Dakois Ushidufois, the emaciated stalks, Tsaimchois Acharim, was sprouting after the thick and fat stalks. And it goes on to repeat the details. Vativlano Hashibolim Hadakois, Ace Sheva Hashibolim, and it repeats. Habriois vehamalayois. Why is it necessary for the pasuk to repeat the description of the fat stalks with the words habriois vehamalayois? The answer is, you know why it repeated these two details? It was because it wanted to omit one detail. Here, in the time when they were swallowed, it leaves out the fact that they were bekone echad. That's the only difference. In the first description, the seven thick stalks were all rooted in one kone. In the second description, when they were swallowed up and destroyed, they were fat and gesund, but it leaves out the fact that they were rooted in one kone. What is the significance of being rooted in one kone? Kemat the Baal HaTorim says this, is because achdus, it's miksha achas, it's one unit. As long as a society is together, they are the achdus. Everyone is on the same team. There is joy. There is. Everyone sees eye to eye. There is achdus. Then you are indestructible. The moment when the kone echad disappears, each man to himself. Everyone is separate. Each man fend for yourself. Even though each one of these stalks, these seven stalks, is fat, is gesund, is thick, if you don't have the ingredient of the kone achas, then you are vulnerable. The konim, which are emaciated, can come, can sprout, and can swallow you up. I think over here you have this parallel both in both stories of the Poros and the Konim, how you see they are described twice, and the only detail is, even when they're described the second time, there's a detail that's being left out. And in the detail that's being left out, this is the moment when we find their vulnerability, to where they are swallowed up by a weaker force. And what is the lesson? The lesson is achdus. Achdus is something which is a necessary ingredient to survive, and the idea of just because a person is blessed does not mean that he should disassociate himself with things of this world that are not pleasant. The Agam is not a pleasant place to be. There's no air conditioning, there's a lot of humidity, it's wet, it's not a pleasant place to be. Yet in the beginning, the Paros that were Yefois, Mare v'Habrios, they did not hold back from going to the Agam. It's only when we find that the Paros, Yefois, Mare v'Habrios, they distance themselves from the Agam. They no longer want to associate themselves with the Agam. And when the Kohanim no longer wanted to be B'Kone Achas, now we find they open themselves up to this vulnerability, or even something that is weaker and Shvacher can come overtake them and destroy them. This is, I think, there's a little stickle mussar over here in these words. Okay, let's go to another idea. We have here in this week's parasha the idea of Ephraim and Menashe. And this is something very, very disturbing. Yosef is in Mitzrayim. He was a servant by Potiphar for 10 years. And then he interpreted the dreams of the Sar HaMashkim and the Sar HaOifim. And he told the Sar HaMashkim to remember him. And it took 2 years until Paro had his dreams, and he indeed was remembered, and he was released from the prison. So it's already 12 years in Egypt. And now, Yosef suddenly is Oile Ligedula. He becomes the Mishnah L'melech, and he's given Osnas Bas Potiphera as a wife, and he shortly thereafter has two children. And he names his two children Menashe and Ephraim. Why is Menashe called Menashe? Ki noshani Elokim es beis avi. I forgot all about my father. Baruch Hashem, I'm here in Egypt. I'm Mishnah L'melech. I got a wife. I got a job. I have prestige. I have kavod. I have power. Good riddance. Good riddance to my father. Good riddance to where I come from, to my lineage, my heritage. Isn't that what it says in the pasuk? Am I making this up? Ki nashani Elokim es beis avi. He totally, I forgot. Life is so good. I forgot all about my past. And then he has a second son, Ephraim. Ki Ephrani Elokim be'eretz ani. I become successful in my new homeland. How could that be? Yosef HaTzadik. He names his two children. Is insulting his father. He goes and he just pushes him away. Goodbye, good riddance. I don't want to know from you anymore. Here, I forgot about you and I'm successful in my new homeland. How you talking? Is this what a tzaddik does? How do we understand this? So I don't have a good answer. I really don't have a good answer. There are answers. Everyone deals with this answer. I want to just make the following suggestion. It's not a complete answer. Maybe you think about it. There's a word, there's a pasuk of introduction before Yosef HaTzadik names his two children. And what is the pasuk of introduction? It says, and you know, we know that Yosef interprets the dreams, and in the dream he predicts there's going to be a famine. There's going to be a famine. So we know there's going to be a famine. And yet the pasuk emphasizes this. Uli Yosef yulad shnei vanim. Here we have some words that are really not necessary. Beterem tavoy shnas horov. He had two children before the famine began. Asher yoldeloy osnas bas potifera koinon. Why is it necessary for the pasuk to mention that the two children were born to him before the famine began? So Rashi tells us one answer. Rashi tells us the ik. Rashi is Rabban Shel Yisrael, no question about it, to teach you a halacha that a person should not have children in the time of famine. How are you going to feed your children? A person should not engage in Puriya Urvi in the time of Sabbath. Okay, that's Pshuta Shel Mikra, Rashi Rabban Shel Yisrael. But I want to say a drush. And the drush is, Yosef knew, it's clear as day to Yosef, the famine's going to begin. And Yosef also knew that now during these 7 years, life is great. Life is wonderful. I have a wife, I have children, I have parnasa, I have kavod, I have everything you can possibly want. But I know that in 2 years from now, in 7 years from now, 7 years from now, there's going to be a famine. And when there's going to be a famine, I'm going to have nothing. There's going to be a lot of tzaras. Yosef, I want to suggest, I don't know if this is correct to say such a thing, Yosef was naming his children Al Ha'osid in order, Pumfaker, to remember where he really comes from. In Golis, unfortunately, we have a tendency in Golis to get swept away in the blessing of Golis. The good things that Golis has to offer. All the Gashmis, the freedom that we have in Golis. But Golis is Golis. Eventually, it's going to catch up with you. And when it catches up with you, you have to remember where you come from. What's going to happen in 7 years from now when Yosef is going to be living in time of famine? And people are not going to have what to eat. People will be dying in the streets. There's no food. The whole world is suffering. Yosef will look at his son, Menashe, and he'll say, Menashe, come, let's have a conversation. Let's learn a Daf Gemara. What's your name? Menashe. What does Menashe mean? I forgot all about my father, my roots. Am I crazy? What do I have now? I have nothing. I'm living here in Golis. I'm in Golis. I don't have power. I don't have food. I don't have... I'm not allowed to have children anymore. I have nothing. And you remind me that my past, my lineage, my heritage is worthless. Am I crazy? Calling his child Menashe at a time of when he has nothing will intensify his yearning, his gaguim, to go back to his roots. Right now, when everything is fine and good, of course, saying Menashe, it's an insult. It's almost an insult to his parents. It's an insult to the Ribbono Shel Olam, calling his children Ephraim and Menashe. But Yosef was not calling his children Ephraim and Menashe for now. Yosef is calling his children Ephraim and Menashe al Shem Ha'osid. He was referring, I'm calling you now Ephraim and Menashe because that I know that in 7 years from now, the Ra'av will begin. And when the Ra'av will begin, I will have absolutely nothing. It's not going to be fun to live in a time to be the Mishnah Lamelech when there's a depression. Okay, it's fun to be the President of the United States when the economy is doing very, very well. But when the economy is not doing well, and people are starving, and people are complaining and there are riots, it's not fun to be the leader of the free world. It's just not a fun thing to do. Then I'm going to call my children Ephraim and Menashe. Ah, it's gewaldic to live here in this land. This is something which is so disturbing. It will force Yosef to awaken himself and to realize, where do I really belong? I don't belong in this land at all. I belong back home in Eretz Yisrael, in Eretz Canaan. In Golos, it catches up with us. Just because right now we're living in Golis, and in times of Golis, there are good times in Golis, when there are peaceful times in Golis, and a person has a tendency to forget about it. We're not interested in returning back to Eretz Yisrael. You have to set up for yourself a reminder, a safeguard, that no matter how comfortable you feel, this is not where you belong. Yosef, I'm trying to suggest, was very cleverly trying to mock himself. It was a mockery almost. I'm calling my children Ephraim and Menashe, not for now. I have inside information from the Ribbono Shel Olam, from the dreams of Paro, that in 7 years from now, there's going to be terrible tsaros. And then I'm going to say to myself how foolish I was. I was willing for the past seven years, I was living it up in Golis. I enjoyed Golis. I didn't think about where I came from. I didn't think about my heritage. I didn't think about my roots. What a fool I was. Because Golis, when the day is over, it's not fun. When the day is over, it catches up with you. And halacha biyodeinu Esav son Yaakov, you come to recognize it's not where you belong. He's giving his children these names in preparation for the days of Rav that are coming, and then at that point in time to look upon his children and reflect, wow, what a fool I was. What a fool I was to think that Golos is something which you can live with, something which you can deal with, and maybe people who will come in my wake will learn from me will learn from me that when you are in Golos, don't get swept away in Golos. Because Golos comes to an end. And when Golos, when Golos catches up with you and you realize where you really, really belong, then it's a whole different perspective. So that's why I want to suggest, that's why it says over here, Biterem Tavoshna Sarov. He's not calling his two children Ephraim and Manasseh for right now. That would be ridiculous. He's calling them in preparation for the Shnas HaRav, in order that he should mock himself in realizing how foolish he was to feel comfortable in the good days of Golis that are upon him, instead of using this time as a way to return to his roots, to turn to the Shroshim, back to his father Yaakov Avinu at home in Eretz Canaan. Okay, let's go to another idea. It is a short idea. Yaakov Avinu, he sees in Mitzrayim, there's a famine, and he sees al piruach hakodesh ki yeshever b'Mitzrayim, and he says to his children, lama tisrahu. Now, what does that simply mean? Shever means food. He sees that everyone in Canaan is starving, and he sees that in the Mitzrayim he gets word, he reads that there is food to be found in Egypt, and if you send down messengers to Egypt, you can buy food and you can survive. Therefore, Lama Tisro, since all of our neighbors are suffering, the Pshuto Shel Mikra, don't make believe to all of the people in the country that you have what to eat. You should be Mishtatif in their Tsar and also go down to Mitzrayim to buy food. Let me just read the Pasuk. Let me read the Pasuk over here. When the famine begins, let me give you the Rashi. Rashi says,
122.
Vayar Yaakov ki yeshever b'Mitzrayim. Vayomer Yaakov levanav lama tisrohu. Rashi, what does Rashi say in Pasuk Aleph? His words are mehechan ro. Where did Yaakov see v'halolo ro? Ella shama shnemer hine shamati. Mayar yu be'aspaklaria shel kodesh shadayim yesh leshever b'Mitzrayim. Lohaisa nevua mamish. Loidia the parish is okay. So he saw that there is food in Mitzrayim. He tells his children, Lama Tisrahu, Lama Tir Atzmachan Bifnei Bnei Yishmol Bnei Esav Shseveim. Why do you make believe? Why do you present yourself in front of Esav and Yishmol to be as if you're Seveim? You have what to eat. You're satisfied. You're satiated. Ki ba'oisa shah dain ha'yelochem tevua. Because at that point in time, Yaakov's family still had what to eat. Why let you people look at you and they wonder, why don't you go down and get food like everyone else? Okay, now I want to just say a simple drush, and that is the word shever. We actually just read this in Yecheskel. The word shever also means brokenness. In other words, Mitzrayim was the world power. Mitzrayim was, at this point in time, was the leader, the superpower of the world. And Canaan was viewed to be a third world nation. And now look what happened over here. At this point in time, Eretz Mitzrayim has suffered a shever. Eretz Mitzrayim, the third world, the superpower of the world, has gone into depression. The economy is in a state of depression. There is starving in the streets. Klal Yisrael, Eretz Canaan, where Yaakov is living with his children, they had food. That's what Chazal tell us. They had food stashed away. They were not affected by the famine as the land of Egypt. What would be the natural inclination of a person who witnesses the downfall of a superpower to gloat? Ha ha, look what happened to you. Here you are, the superpower of the world. You intimidate us. You look down upon us as being sophisticated and moral and advanced. And we're a third world nation. We're living here in Canaan. And now, look what has happened. The tables have been turned. There is now a shever b'Mitzrayim. Egypt, the superpower of the world, is in a state of disrepair. Yaakov Avinu says to his children, don't gloat. Lama Tisrahu. Don't take pride. Ah, you see, we've been vindicated. We're better, we're smarter, we're more sophisticated. Look what happened to you. This is not a derech. It's not a derech to appear to be sveim when your friends are in a state of shever. Lama tisrohu. Be mishtatev in the tsar, in the pain of someone else who is suffering. It's a very powerful liman amos. Just because the person his whole life feels that he's persecuted, he's suffering, there are people that are superior, that are better. Now when the tables are turned, don't gloat. Binfal oyvecha al tismach. That's really what the pasuk of here is saying. There's a shever in Mitzrayim. Egypt is in a state of sorrow, of brokenness. Lama tisrohu. It's not the right thing for you to gloat, to pride yourself. Adarabba, be mishtatef in their pain. Go down to Egypt. See what you can do. We'll send you there on some rescue missions, zaka missions, and help the people there farm and produce for themselves some food. Okay, let's go to another idea. Okay, you have a very powerful, Baal HaTurim. This Baal HaTurim, I really feel, is the shoresh to a certain degree of the pasuk in this week's parasha. Avol Hashemim Anachnu. Well, I will just say that really referring to really next week's parasha, which ties into this week's parasha of the fact that the brothers did not recognize Yosef. Let me explain what I mean. The brothers come to Egypt, and pasuk says Vayar Yosef es Echav Vayakirein. The moment Yosef's brothers arrived in Egypt, Yosef immediately recognized who they were. Vayisnaker alehem, vayidavitam koshos, he speaks with them harshly, vayim alehem, where are you from? And they say, we come from Canaan. He tells them, vayaker, here's the key pasuk, vayaker Yosef es echov, veheim, lo hikiruhu, they did not recognize who he was. And this is a mystery. How could it be that they did not recognize who their brother was? Did he not share the same physical features? So Rashi says that when Yaakov left his brothers, they already had beards. Mm-hmm. They were older. They left with beards, but Yosef, when he was sold to Egypt, he did not have a beard. Mm-hmm. I'll read you the words of Rashi. Rashi's words are... Chasima zokein veheim lo hikiruhu shayotza me etzlam biloy chasima zokon. The achshav mitzau, they found him bechasima zokon. Okay, umedesh agada vayaka Yosef esachav kishenimshu biyado hikir shehem echav. He had rachmanis upon them, whereas when he fell in their hands, they did not have rachmanis upon him. Okay, now let me read you what it says over here in the Baal HaTurim. This is an amazing Baal HaTurim. The Balaam in this pasuk says, Vaheim lo hikiruhu. The word hikiruhu, this expression, these three words together, are found twice in Tanakh. Where are they found? Once here, Beis b'Misores, Hacha, v'idoch gabi Iyov. Iyov was the most successful person in the world. And what happened to Iyov? He was smitten with Yisurim. He lost his wealth, he lost his children. And he physically was suffering. He was smitten with tsaras, with various types of physical ailments, and he was unrecognizable. So what happened? His friends come to visit him. Mm-hmm. It says there in Sefer Iyov, v'yichdabi Iyov merachoik, they saw Iyov from a distance, v'loy hikiruhu, they saw Iyov from a distance, and they did not recognize who this person was. Could you imagine the most successful person in the world? Person who appeared every single night in prime time. Media, now they did not recognize who Iyov was. Ma hosam lo hikiruhu b'shvil shemishtane machmas hayisurin. Just like there, their friends did not recognize Iyov because of what has transpired, the suffering. Afkan lo hikiruhu b'shvil shemishtane. They did not recognize Yosef because of his change. When Yosef left them, he was a nothing. They viewed him as being a total, as a roidef. And now they see here the person who's the Mishneh LeMelech. They never fathomed that he could rise to such greatness. Shehoya Eved, they viewed him originally as a slave, Vinasa Sarvi Gadol B'chol Aretz. But then the Baal HaTurim goes on to say, Mihu, however, there's a fundamental difference between the two. Now this is key. This is mamish, I believe, the shoresh of this parasha and next week's parasha. These next words. Umiu, hasam lo hikiru merachoik. By Iyov, it says, merachoik, v'lo hikiruhu, only from a distance. But when they got closer and they looked again, oh, indeed, this is Eif. Avol kishakarvu elof hikiruhu. Avol hocha by Yosef. Lo hikiruhu klau. When they came into the room and they saw him at a distance, they did not recognize who he was. And as they got closer, and as the whole episode, the whole saga unravels in front of us, and they have contact with him, and they have a conversation with him, and he reveals to them secrets that only they knew. Still, they never ever figured out that this is their brother Yosef. This is a pillar, one of the major questions of the parasha. How could it be that throughout parshas, Miketz, and Vayigash, they never figured out that this is their brother Yosef? He knew every detail about their life. Rashi tells us he even told them what their cribs were made from. The company who made their baby carriage, their stroller. He told them things that only someone, an insider, could know. So they didn't figure out. We sold our brother Yosef to Egypt. He probably worked his way up the ladder and he became the Mishnah Lamelech. How could it possibly be?
Well, he told them through his becher that he was a sorcerer.
Kinachesh, but even so, how much sorcery already could you do already to know such minute details? So Chazal discussed this. And the best Chazal's answer to this question was the brothers thought when they were disturbed at the mystery, how he can know so much about their lives, was they figured that Yosef must have been sold at some point in time as a slave to this man. And they had a conversation. And Yosef revealed to this man all of the details of his personal life and where he came from. Relayed this to this individual. But this individual, no way in the world could it possibly be that it's Yosef himself. It's just impossible. That's what it says. Chazal say this. This is Rishonim, what's in Medrash. That's the closest they came to fathoming that this person can be Yosef. Yosef, no way. Maybe this person who knows all these details is because he was in contact with our brother Yosef, and Yosef revealed all this inside information to this person, but it can't be Yosef himself. Even when they had long conversations and they ate, they had a meal. I was looking at this parasha. They had a meal. They sat down. He arranged them according to their age. He gave a special present to Binyamin. V'chulu, v'chulu. No, this cannot possibly be Yosef, even though he looks like us, he talks like us, he sounds like us, he talks about the Ribbono Shel Olam, he knows everything about us. No way, no way could it be Yosef. But Eiv, who was the most popular person in the world, who fell from a state of unimaginable greatness to a state of lowliness, of incredible yisurim, to lose everything he ever had, to be smitten with the worst form of illness, disease that exists in this world. Who could imagine such a great, successful person would fall from greatness to lowliness? They never could fathom, but when they got very, very close, and they started to talk to him, and they engaged him in conversation. Ah, Eiv, it's you. It's you. I saw you used to be on television every night. Now I talk a see. I see you're nothing. I see it's talk of you. How can this talk? That's the difference between Eiv and Yosef. Let's go further. Avol kishakarvu el elav hikiru avol hachalo hikiru klal shelo helu al daitam sheyagia Yosef lamal kazu. They never fathomed that Yosef would be such a madrega. You have to see the words of the Baal HaTurim inside later. Look at these words inside. Now let's go a step further. What happens in this expansion? This
is one before, he wanted to reveal himself in the Malach cave. He says he didn't want to. Let. This is the same Baal HaTurim.
Yeah.
Look at the Baal HaTurim in Zion.
Zayin vayakrim ubikish lekabel b'seiv upon him yafayis uboch hamalach v'shematzu toye v'hiskiroi miyad vayisnaki. Okay, fine. He wanted, but then was by he was nasty to them. He did not reveal, but they didn't figure it out. The point is, they did not figure it out. But Eiv, they figured out. You see the contrast. Let me just free on this point. Now, the whole parsha, it's a mystery. They never figured it out. Next week's parsha. Finally, Yosef says, "Ani Yosef, ha'oid avi chai." And the pasuk says, "What are the words?" The pasuk, "Ani Yosef ha'oid avi chai." V'lo yachul echav la'anois oisai ki nifh. halu mipanof. They were in a state of shock. And Chazal say this state of shock is the same frame of mind that every person will experience on the Yom Hadin. On the Yom Hadin, Achar Meir Eshrim, and the Yom Hadin HaGadol of La'asalavo, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu reveals Himself into the world, and Hashem says, Ani Hashem, where have you been all this time? I'm always here for you. I've always been here. How could it be you didn't recognize me? Ani Hashem. And what are we going to do at the Yom Hadin? We will be in a state of terror, a state of bewilderment, a state of shock, similar to the state of shock of Yosef, the brothers of Yosef HaTzadik. Now let's look at this. Let's understand this. Look what's going on. This unfortunately is the great mystery of man, the great failing of man, the great problem that we suffer in this world. And that is, when it comes to see a person who is great and to see his downfall, to see him suffer, that we figure out very quickly. Who would imagine Eli, the top of the world, would go so low? Yeah, I knew it. I knew it all along. Why? Because I'm jealous. I'm jealous. I also deserve this bracha. It's so easy for a person to see the bad in someone else. It was possible. They could not imagine such a thing would happen. But when they got a little closer, yeah, that's Eif. But in the other direction, to fargin a person who's a nothing, he should rise to become the Gadol Hadar. They never figured it out. Why didn't they figure it out? Because they didn't want to figure it out. The same way a person can see Eliyahu go from greatness to nothingness, it's the same span. It's the same highway. It's possible for a person to see someone who's a nothing. You know, maybe this nothing developed, he grew, he educated himself, he climbed the ladder, and he became a great person, whether it's in the Olam HaGashmi or Olam HaRuchni. But it's the weakness of man to be willing. What?
It's gaiva.
The gaiva of a person.
You mean this guy who's a nobody can be as big as me?
Exactly. Be bigger than me. Be bigger than me. A person is not willing to fargin. To go and to be gracious. That's right. You can be something very, very great. You can rise to greatness. This is the essence. The essence. When Chazal want to tell us, when Chazal want to describe to us what is the essence of the Yom Hadin, the whole Yom Hadin, all of the Tayag Mitzvahs. Did you learn Torah? Did you daven? Did you yearn for Mashiach? The whole Yom Hadin is all summarized in this midah. In the midah, the willingness to see greatness in someone else. And don't say, well, what do you expect? It's not possible to see greatness. What do you want from me? It's not possible to see greatness. It just does not. Yes, it is. Because if a person is able to see someone's downfall, that means you're able to see someone's rise. Because it's the same either. It's the same thing. It's the unexpected. If by Eov it was only Merachoik v'lo hikiru, but Bekarov hikiru, that is a revelation that it's possible to see greatness in the same direction. That Merachoik, we never expected Yosef to be the Mishnah Melech. Merachoik, but now that we have a conversation and he knows all this information, it's so obvious. This is Yosef. So it is possible. It is possible. And yet you fail to see it? Oy lanu miyoyim hadin. Oy lanu miyoyim hatoichacha.
So how is it connected to Yom Hadin?
Chazal connected to the Yom Hadin.
Yeah, but how?
Because when Chazal, because what happened that after? This whole parasha, it's a big mystery. What happens in the next week's parasha? Ani Yosef. And what is the reaction? Ki nifhalu miponof. We never saw this coming. Chazal enter. This state of ki nivhalu miponov is a dugma, is the perfect dugma of Yom Hadin. Yom HaDin can be summarized in this example. What do you mean? Yom HaDin. Nosata v'nosata be'emuna. Did you deal in business honestly? Did you set aside time for Torah? Were you Isaac in Priya Revia? There are many elements to the Yom HaDin. What are Chazal taking over here, this idea? Oy lanu miyom HaDin, oy lanu miyom HaToychacha. Obviously, this state of Ani Yosef is equivalent to the Yom HaDin Ani Hashem. And the same way Yosef's brothers, Kinef Halu Miponov, we will be in a state of Kinef Halu Miponov from the Ribbono Shel Olam. What's the connection? The connection is it's all rooted in this one Midah. All of our problems are rooted in the fact that we have a difficulty, we have a problem in seeing the greatness of someone else. It's so easy to knock, to look at another segment of society and say they're crazy, they're nuts. What are they doing? They're not like me. I'm much better. If only they would come around and see my way of life, my approach to life, and my ideas, they would realize that I'm right and you're wrong. It's so hard for us to recognize that there are other people out there in this world, and they have what to offer. They have something, they have mindless. And at people who you never would expect would achieve greatness, look what they have accomplished. Look what they have done for this world. This is a problem that we suffer from. And this is what Yom HaDin is all about. And look at this Baal HaTurim, who he takes, and you, if not for this Baal HaTurim, you would say, listen, it's not my fault. What do you expect? I'm only a human being. A human being is not expected to anticipate, to see the unexpected. No, you're not. You don't have the power to see the unexpected. When it comes to Eov, that you did see very well. Eov, no one in a million years would expect Eov to go from his state of greatness to a state of lowliness. And in fact, the fall of Eov is even greater than the rise of Yosef. And that you're able to see. Merachoik v'lo hikiru, but bekoroit hikiru. And here, afilu bekoroit v'lo hikiru. Why? It's because when you have to recognize someone else is great, someone else has a mila, that's a hard thing to do.
So the focus and on Yom HaDin has been Adam la'Adam?
It's everything. The Yom HaDin, no, there are many dimensions to the Yom HaDin, obviously, but this midah you see is the root, is an ikur midah in the human. In the human nature, which everything depends upon.
And maybe he's saying in the same way, for the same reason, we find it difficult to recognize the greatness of Hashem.
Okay, that's also related in a chanamik. In a chanamik, you don't want to see the good in something which happens. That's right. You look at world events. You don't want to appreciate the milus. You're only looking for chesronos. It's very easy to find chesronos. Mm-hmm. Very easy, but it's not a black and white world. Everything which happens, there are problems. We know there are problems. But you have to also appreciate the minus. And a person is all negative. Everything is no good, no good, no good. Everyone is no good. And this is no good, that's no good. That's not the way to go. And look at this Baal HaTurim. Look, don't go say, well, it has to be like that. You see, there is a possibility to open up your eyes and see something. And the brothers, they failed in this matter. And Chazal tell us, when you fail in the Yom HaDin, it's all rooted in this idea. Okay, but running out of time, I'm going to tell you another quick idea. I think this is also very powerful to sort of answer many, many questions in this week's parasha. The brothers come before Yosef. Yosef says to them, Yemiraglim, and he accuses them of being Miraglim, and he says to them, I'm going to take away from you Shimon. And he is eavesdropping upon them, and then the brothers break out and they say, well, let me read you the words, the positive, very important words. They say to themselves, Avol Ashemim Anachnu. We're guilty. Alochinu, Ashereinu, and Saras Nafsho, Bishanu Leinu Veloy Shamanu. Then something very bizarre. Reuven, he adds insult to injury. You know, I told you not to do this. I told you not to do this, and you didn't listen to me. Let me read over here the words of the Pasuk here. I'm in the wrong parasha. Okay, what page is it on? 124. It's a good thing you told me that. Okay. Avol Hashem Anachnu Alachinu. Next Pasuk. Vayad Ruven Vayosam Vlemar Haloi Amarti Alechem Lemar Al Techetu Vayelev Veloy Shematem Vegam Damo Hine Nidrosh. And now his blood is being sought after. We're going to be responsible. What's this conversation? Avol Hashem Anachnu. All of a sudden, after 22 years, the brothers are admitting guilt. I mean, every time a person, Rachmana Litzlan, has a tragedy in life, you're going to attribute it to an event that happened 22 years ago. and they expected to attribute. When they saw the brother Yosef, knew they, there was a Bezdin, they formed the Bezdin, and they decided he's a Roidev. He's a Roidev, he has to be put to death. Vizehu, they made a decision, live with it. They did not consider themselves to be sinners, and now 22 years have passed, it's still bothering them. Nothing else happened bad in the last 22 years where they could attribute their problems to another event in the list. They were such a tzaddik, and nothing else happened. Maybe, yeah, maybe not. There's something over here, something very disturbing. In Lumafarshim, they deal, they want to say in Echanami, they saw here the Midah Keneged Midah. There are a lot of different answers which all follow the same approach. Is that in Echanami, they had no other Averos. It bothered them. They saw here Midah Keneged Midah, brothers. One brother was being held hostage, Shimon. They saw a parallel, and they came to recognize, yeah, we are in trouble. But it doesn't answer all of the questions. I wanted to tell you an idea which I think answers almost all of the questions. And that's, there are two words here in this pasuk, the pasuk before this, which I really think opens up the whole parasha. I just have to dwell upon the two words. Yosef says to the brothers as follows, listen, I suspect there's some foul play over here. You're coming here, you're coming from Canaan, who knows, maybe you're a spy, I don't know what's going on over here, you're telling me, Chobam Maisa, that you have a brother, you have brother Yamin, and you have an old father. Do I believe you? I don't believe you, I don't know. So let's do a test. Let me take one of your brothers, let me lock him up, you go back home, bring me the other brother, and then we'll see. And he says here two words. Let me read the whole pasuk. V'es achichem hakaton toviu elai. I want you to bring the younger brother you claim you have to me. And now there are two words that are really superfluous. These two words are really superfluous. If these next two words would not appear in this parasha, you would not blink. Yosef says two words. V'ye'ominu divrechem. Let's see if you are anshei emes. Let me see if you are people of your word. You make a statement. Are you telling me the truth, not telling me the truth? I want to determine right now, are you people who are truthful? Your words mean something. And if you are people who are anshei emes, your words are, you're a man of your word, then v'lo samusu. And the way we're going to do this is to see if you're telling me the truth. You're telling me that you have a father, you have a brother. You make these claims. It's not so much that you're spies, you're not spies. The only thing that matters to me now is to know if I can trust your word. When they heard this, they were very shaken up. Because Bayomu, it triggered in them, he's coming to challenge the Koyach HaDibur. Here's the key point I want to make. He's coming to challenge your Koyach HaDibur. A person who is a man of MS, who speaks MS, is able to listen to the MS. It's a two-way street. If you speak MS, if you're makbid on your dibur, on your koyach dibur, that means you take seriously someone else's koyach dibur. This is a reality of life. A person who is an honest person cannot tolerate a liar. Politician, on the other hand, has no trouble associating with other politicians. You know, what I say is not true, what you say is not true, let's all be friends. But people who are people of MS, who speak MS, when someone else says something, they not only believe, they listen to what they say. And they take their words seriously. If what I say is MS, what I say is serious. That means what I'm saying is MS. What you say is also, I take it seriously. Because every other person is a reflection of themselves. If my word is MS, your word is MS. Or at least it's something which has to be considered. When he challenged their MS, their degree of sincerity, they now thought about in their life, when was it a time in life when someone spoke to us and we ignored them? In other words, and that was Yosef. What happened? Well, look at their words. They're very powerful what the words are. They immediately, when their Koyach HaDibur was challenged, Vayomu Ish Eloch, if Aval Hashem Anachnu, what are we guilty? What? So you would expect the pasuk to say, we're guilty for what? How would you finish off this pasuk if it was up to you? We're guilty for selling our brother as a slave. No. And Mepharshim pointed out, they never had Charata for that. They never had Charata that we sold them. You know what we're guilty? We're guilty that we didn't listen to our brother's appeal. we're guilty alochinu asheroinu saras nafsho bihischanino eleinu. The guilt, what bothered them now was not that they sold him. They couldn't care less they sold him. What they bothered them is that when we sold him, Yosef begged us. He cried to us, don't sell me. Let's figure this out. Let's find a solution. Yosef spoke words of reason. You want to eliminate me? Fine. You want to take away the Bechorah from me? Fine. But you don't have to go and kill me. You don't have to go deny my father, have my father suffer the pain of losing his youngest son. There's a way to work this out. Yosef was in a state, behischano, he tried to reason, to speak words of intelligence to the brothers. And the brothers said, we don't want to listen to you. If the brothers did not want to listen to words of reason, to words of emes, that must be a reflection that indeed they are not people of emes. And when Yosef said to them, V'yayomnu divreichem, let's see what you have to say. Let's see if you're emes. We're being challenged. We're having tzar. So what's the midah keneged midah? In Achnami, because there was a time when someone spoke to us words of emes and we didn't listen. It takes two to tangle. If we didn't listen to his words of emes, because taka, we...
Because they said sheker to Yaakov
Avinu. That's all the part, but v'schan eileinu v'loy shamanu. Alkein b'hoi leinu hatzar hazos. We're being challenged for our dibur of emes because we did not listen to someone else's dibur of emes. Who? The victim. Now it makes sense, Reuven. Reuven speaks up. He's not coming to add insult to injury. Reuven is coming to express it's the guilt. It's not just the victim spoke words of emes. I, Reuven, also tried to speak words of emes. Reuven says, "Vayan Reuven osam leimor halo amarti aleichem." He's not just saying, "Oh, you sold your brother. And I told you not to do it." I also spoke words of emes, and you, the other brothers, were not receptive to listening to words of emes. So why do you think your koyach hadibur of emes is any better? If you accept words of emes, then that's a sign that your dibur is a dibur of emes. If you reject words of emes, that goes to show the reason why you reject words of emes is because you yourself don't value the koyach hadibur. You hang out, you motzon minas minoi. Halo yom marti aleichem leimor al techetu v'yel v'lo shvatem v'lo dinei domon din dinosh. Two different examples of where words of truth were spoken, and you did not pay attention. Both by the victim, Yosef, and by me, his lawyer, his advocate. Therefore, that goes to show that you are people who are not people of MS, and now you understand the midah keneged midah, why Yosef, in disguise of the Mishnah Lamelech, is coming to challenge you as not being people of MS. V'yayomnu divreichem. Let your words be truthful. This is the most powerful midah over here in the saga of Yosef and his brothers. The lesson is to be a person of MS. Okay, we're running out of time. So one verse for Chanukah to wind down. Chanukah goes back to this. Goes back. Chanukah. Just a quick word. Chanukah. We light the menorah. The menorah is on the right side, on the left side. On the right side is the mezuzah. Who stands in the center? Is the Baal HaBayis. The Baal HaBayis is wearing tzitzis. You're standing in the center, in between the menorah and the mezuzah. What is the significance of the Baal HaBayis? Tzitzis says the Gemara. Baal HaBayis is wearing what? You're lighting it towards the end of the day. That's what it says in the Gemara. The Gemara says the Baal HaBayis stands in the center wearing tzitzis. Now let's think about this. Very short. What does it say in the mezuzah? There are two parashiyos. Shema, dehaya im shamaya. Every single day, what do we when we say Kriya Shema? What do we say in Kriya Shema? Not two parashios, three parashios. Shema, v'haya im shamaya, and the parash of tzitzis. What is the parash of tzitzis doing there? So Mepharshim said, because it's because of zecher li yitzias mitzrayim. The only reason why we read the parasha of Tzitzis is because Tzitzis is, we want to mention Yitzias Mitzrayim, Mitzvah Deraisa. So why mention the parasha of Tzitzis? There are so many other parashas in the Torah which mention Yitzias Mitzrayim. So the Gemara gives a whole number of answers, because in the parasha of Tzitzis it mentions other things. It mentions the mitzvahs, it mentions Tayag Mitzvah, it's a very nice parasha which includes within it the idea of Kol HaTorah Kula. So since we anyway need to select a pasuk that mentions Yitzias Mitzrayim, we chose Tzitzis Shehukash Kol HaTorah LeTzitzis. Now, think about this. When you light the menorah, you're basically reciting the entire Kriya Shema. Because you have the mezuzah on the right side, which has the parasha of Shema and the Hoya in Shemaya, and you're standing in the center with your tzitzis. So that's like saying Kriya Shema, Shema, Hoya in Shemaya, and reciting the third parasha of Yitzias Mitzrayim of tzitzis. And that's when you light the menorah. What's the connection between the two? So I think there's another very important point which really brings out what Chanukah is all about. Chanukah was brought, the Pach Shemen, the entire theme of the Pach Shemen is the concept of Tahara. The all of the oil was contaminated. All of the oil, the Beis Hamidrash, was tame. It was contaminated due to the spiritual contamination of the Yevonim, the Misyavnim, Avodah Zarah. V'lo imatzu afilu, v'lo imatzu ela pach echad sheyamunach b'chasamah shel kohen gadol. The kohen gadol is the ish tahar. He put his seal on the shemen is tahar. The mezuzah represents Kabbalas O Malchus Shemayim, Kabbalas HaMitzvahs. The menorah represents Tahara. It's one ingredient that's missing, and that is Kedusha. What is the advantage of the parish of Tzitzis? U'i'isem o'isoy, u'zichartem es kol mitzvahs Hashem, v'yisem kedoshim le'loi keichem. What does the parasha of Tzitzis bring to the table that's not found in mezuzah, that's not found in Chanukah? It brings to the table the theme that you should be holy people. You can be a person who shomer Torah u'mitzvahs, novel b'rishus ha-Torah. You can be a novel b'rishus ha-Torah just because you observe Torah mitzvahs. Doesn't mean that you're really a religious person. I only eat kosher meat because it's healthy. I only do certain things. I don't have internet in my home because I don't want to be distracted. You can observe the Tariag Mitzvahs, but you're not a religious person. And then you have an appreciation of Tahara. I send a nice check to the Beis HaMikdash, there's a Kohen Gadol, and there's purity in this world. But I'm Nishtahi Nishtaher. The goal of Chanukah is to be the person in between the Mezuzah and the Pach Shemen. What's the purpose of being in between? It's to be lavush b'tzitzis, and what tzitzis adds to the table is the synthesis of tahara. Tahara is just static. Tahara is not alive. Something that is pure is pure. It never came in contact with contamination. Kiddusha is life. It's the active form of the observance of mitzvahs in a state of tahara. Wearing the tzitzis brings with it the pasuk of v'hiyisem kidoshim leiloi keichem. Don't just have Torah, Kabbalas, O Malchus Shemayim, and mitzvahs. Don't just have an appreciation for what tahara is. Take the tahara, take Torah mitzvahs, bring them together, live it. When you bring together tahara with Torah mitzvahs, you bring into the world Kiddusha, v'hi yisem kidoshim leilai keichem. This is the lesson of Chanukah. Have a wonderful Shabbos Chanukah.